Do re mi,
do re mi,
do re mi fa so la ti.
Oh, let's see if I can make it easier.
Do, a deer, a female deer. Re, a drop of golden sun. Mi.
And so on and so on. Yes, technicians of Spaceship Earth, that was Julie Andrews introducing you to Hawk Binge, your journey over the rainbow that is the Hawkwind discography, one album at a time, in the company of a longtime fan, which would be me, and a first-time listener, which would be Matt. How's life in New York, Matt?
Not too bad, thanks, Andy. I'm actually getting ready to move, so starting to put things in boxes and go to a new location, which is going to be quieter for recording, and will actually have an entire room which I can use to completely pad out and hopefully elevate the quality of our recordings. So that's definitely worth the chaos that moving brings, I'm sure.
Excellent. Well, we're very grateful for this enterprise that we're going through purely for the recording quality of the podcast.
And no other reason.
Excellent. So, as is usually the case, we've been playing, in this case, Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La, Ti, Do, or Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La, Ti, Do, as I now can't stop calling it.
And whatever I called it last time.
Yes, it was a good effort. I thought Julie would help you out at the top of this podcast. But there have been other things that we have been listening to in and around Hawkwind. So, Matt, what have you been up to?
So I don't know whether or not it was because we've been listening to a lot of Hawkwind or just because it's that time in my brain again, but I spent last weekend enjoying the Beatles Yellow Submarine film. And I don't remember when I first saw it. I'm pretty sure it was a VHS tape. I remember as a kid just watching it over and over again, being absolutely fascinated. There was a track on that film that isn't on any album, which I didn't realise, and it's a track called Only a Northern Song, and it's one of the four tracks which was made for the film itself. And it's not a track that I really remember, but the first time the opening chords hit, I was just instantly just like transported, and it's such a great track. I feel like it's a track which probably doesn't get a huge amount of exposure from the Beatles, but it's so weird, and I think it drew me in because there's so many recorded jazzy, fluty, saxophony, weird things all the way through it. It seems to be deliberately out of key. They sing it in a very drony way. It's very meta because they're saying, like, we just felt like doing this. And there's just something kind of Hawkwind-esque about it, which I really like. I know it's got a bit of a bad rap because it seems to be George Harrison wrote it as a kind of middle finger to the record label at that point because he thought that they were making too much money off them. But if you remove that, which I am, it's just a really trippy little piece of music, and I really like it, and I think it sits very nicely in this playlist. So it was a nice return to a childhood track, and somehow again completing a strange loop in this podcast journey for me in my brain.
Nice. That does take me back to watching Yellow Submarine and being particularly freaked out by the Blue Meanies.
Everything about that film is weird. If you wanted to just do a version of it with which had a plot, it would probably be about 8 minutes long. But for me, it's just the journey from the the real world down into Pepperland is just so full of ideas. I think it's one of the real formative things that I looked at that made me realise that you can produce this for a living. You know, like, we haven't really talked about ourselves that much, but, you know, I work in advertising as a creative.
We just lost all of our listeners.
But just the idea of the idea that you can be creative and imaginative and just try to create strange audiovisual experiences for people as a thing to do. I think one of the reasons why I believed in that and got interested in creativity is probably that film. So, yeah, that mixed with this very, very weird track.
Cool. A very trip down memory lane.
Literal trip.
And as you say, very Hawkwind. Yeah. So anything else? I don't know how you follow that up.
So if the world wasn't under a very sensible lockdown, we would be getting excited about Desert Fest right about now. And I wanted to pay tribute to it in my own way, in my house, by going through some of the bands that I would expect to see and enjoy around this kind of time, in the hope that I can somehow like manifest the world to come online so we can go and have fun again as soon as possible. The band that really stood out when I was going through my playlists was a band called Pallbearer. They are just solid riff makers. Everything they do just gets your head nodding. The track Forgotten Days on that album, Forgotten Days, was the one that I kept coming back to. It's quite a long riff, actually. It's a good 4-bar riff before it loops, but it just has this great feeling that as soon as it starts playing, you're like, yeah, we're going to have some fun now. And it's been doing a pretty good job to scratch the itch that an absence of Desert Fest has given me right now.
Outstanding. And it's quite coincidence, really, because we don't sync up on these things before we do the pods. But I've been in very similar headspace to you regarding the Desert Fest and the festival scene and thinking about the bands that we always discover at these things. I'm thinking of Samsara Blues Experiment, of Weed Eater, of Zoltan. There are loads and loads of them. And in 2019, at the last Desert Fest we're actually able to go to, I was looking through the bands that were listed just a few days before it started, wondering who was going to be the discovery, and happened upon a band called Blackwater Holy Light, who I'd never heard of, and were making their British debut as far as I could see, and played about 30 seconds of one track, and you have that immediate, oh, I'm going to be a big fan of you. I was very excited, only to find out that they were going to be playing at 3 p.m. on Friday afternoon, which meant there was no way that I was going to get out and see them. So weirdly, my discovery band of 2019's Desert Fest was a band I had absolutely no chance of seeing whatsoever. But I remember spamming you with, you need to hear this band, you need to hear this band. They came out with a follow-up album to their debut just a year later. So the one I've been listening to is Veils of Winter from 2019 on Riding Easy by Blackwater Holy Light. They have a number of different moods. They can be heavy, they can be doomy, they can be quite light and trippy and poppy or even shoegazy, but it's all consistent within the sound they have, which sounds like this kind of California dreamy, which actually is intended pun, because the two vocalists, one has quite a breathy voice, one has quite a strong voice, and when they harmonize, it harks back to the Mamas and the Papas, you know, California Dreaming, this kind of thing. So it's really, really good, really interesting. I totally advise anyone who's into Hawkwind, which is probably everyone who's listening to this, to give it a go. There's a lot of really good moods in there. So Death Realms was the first single from Veils of Winter, which I would recommend, and we'll be going on to the session playlist. But 2019, that's pretty recent for me. But not as recent as the next one, which is a band called Giobia, G-I-O-B-I-A. They were another very recent discovery. They are on Heavy Psych Sounds, which is a great label. There's plenty of bands that we both like on that. And I saw them at a Heavy Psych Sounds kind of a label sampler night, which was at Borderline, I think, in 2019, just before it closed. And there were four bands on. I remember one of them was Black Rainbows. I think another one might have been With the Dead, which was formed from someone who was with Electric Wizard. And it was kind of very, very heavy. But Giobia were just on that night. We saw them and they were absolutely brilliant. They were very psychedelic. They had some samples of dialogue from old horror films. They had some really trippy keyboards. They had some raucous bits. It has a very late 60s psychedelic feel to it, but a very modern production aesthetic. And it's absolutely brilliant. They came out with an album in 2020, basically. So while we were under lockdown and I was wishing that I could find some new bands, actually, I put on the album of Giobia that I'd heard before. And you know how that thing is when you suddenly get an urge to listen to a band and you put a bit of it on and then you think, I wonder what they're doing now. And you look it up and they've just released an album or they're going to be playing in your town in a few weeks time. That happens so often. So I just looked them up. They just released this album, you know, a couple of days before. So I bought that. It's absolutely brilliant. The track that I've selected is called The Mirror's House. That, again, will be on the Hawk Binge Sessions playlist, which we will discuss a little bit later.
It's interesting, isn't it? That idea of you listening to something, then checking them out, and then you find something related to them, like they're literally playing the next day. That's kind of the positive version of when you look at something online and then it follows you around on Instagram for like ages, or you mention something to your friend and then you suddenly see an ad for it. This is actually the one time you want that to happen.
Yes, exactly. You wonder whether the music industry targeting is well ahead of its time, because it seems to happen an awful lot. that I get an urge to listen to something where the band who did it are just announcing something else or have released something else.
That's the darkness working for you.
I'm pretty sure if any band could do it, Hawkwind would do it.
I'm hoping that they're making an album now just because we're talking about their albums. I hope they're inspired. They just know somehow.
I don't doubt it. It seems to be quite rare that they're not making an album, so I assume that's the case. Which leads us to something a little bit new, because since the last episode, in fact, particularly since the In Search of Space episode, we've actually heard quite a lot from people. It's been great getting a lot of messages, and there's been some reviews, and people have been getting in touch. So we thought we'd take this opportunity just to give a few shout-outs, just to be polite and say hello back before we go back in time to 1972. So firstly, an email from Richard Gould, if you're out there, hello Richard, who pointed out that Hurry on Sundown and Mirror of Illusion, from our first podcast episode, we talked about those being so radically different to everything else. He points out that they were busking tracks that Dave Brock was playing around the time, hence the different sound, which totally makes sense in terms of the different tone. But what I'd really be interested in learning is why they're on there. Because I can think of three reasons why they're on there. One is they just liked them and wanted to record them. Another would be because having cut up all of the live stuff and got the album together, they were short of material and had to put something else on, and those were tracks they had to hand because they knew them. Or they needed something kind of radio-friendly and accessible that they could put on the album to promote it with, and those seemed like likely tracks. So I can't think of any other reasons. What would you say, Matt?
I wonder, just as maybe a sneaky fourth option, whether or not it was the only time that Brock Turner was going to be able to get them recorded and therefore add some kind of posterity to his tracks. So maybe it was getting the whole band together and say, hey, can we add these because I really like them and I don't do any solo recordings. I don't know if he has, but if he hadn't, then that might be a reason.
A fourth option. So if anybody has any, can shed any light on that, then drop us a line. We got a shout out from Rye at the Sabbath Bloody podcast, which is a Black Sabbath podcast that's exceptionally good. I'm a big Sabbath fan and I've listened to all the episodes. So thanks very much for that, Rye. If anybody out there is into the Sabs, then give that a blast. We got a message from Joe Banks, whose book we've read from quite a lot over the past few episodes, and it wasn't a cease and desist order. He actually seemed quite pleased, so there will be more of that. Hello to Joe. Now, friend of the pod, Joe Banks.
Hello, Joe.
Thanks very much to Rock Frog Ian for a five-star review. Thanks for that. Ming on Twitter said some nice things and put a cover of Silver Machine by Psychic TV of Genesis P. Orridge fame, which is actually a pretty kick-ass cover, which a Band Name A Day Twitter account followed up with a cover by James Last, which if you don't know James Last, then you should, and you need to check that one out, because a guy in a shirt and tank top combo plays a pretty freak out solo, and it is effectively a big band cover of Silver Machine that needs to be heard. Tom Dunn on Facebook actually followed that up with a lot of covers. Silver Machine has been covered extensively, and he gave us covers from anyone from Voivod to Hugo Strasser, and I'd never heard of Hugo Strasser, and now I have. On talking of Silver Machine, Graham's Railway Siding 77, great name, pinged a mirror cover of Silver Machine 12-inch from about 1978. Matt, you'd found all these different covers of Silver Machine, but we hadn't come up with that one, so that was an interesting one. A message from Mr. Snodes, who points out that the logbook in In Search of Space was influenced by H.P. Lovecraft and Isaac Asimov, which, having read a lot of Lovecraft and Asimov, I can totally imagine that the logbook is exactly the kind of thing you would come up with if you were overdosing on those. And lastly, out of this, we posted images of the Greasy Truckers album, which is the album of the gig where the performance of Silver Machine was used as the basis for the single. And I pointed out that I'd only ever heard the Hawkwind side of that album. And a lot of people then reached out saying that I needed to listen to the Man side of that album. And I have. And I have to thank you all for that, because that is actually pretty rad, and enjoyed listening to that. So thanks to you all. And yep, we'll give the contact details again at the end of the pod for anyone who wants to reach out to us with anything else in future.
On this side of the planet, we received a 4-star review, which was kind of amazing because it seems to be that the iTunes podcasts is different in the UK and in the US. The review was very nice. I just looked at that and thought 4 stars is a bit mean. But then I remember that Barack Obama and Bruce Springsteen also do podcasts. So I figured that in that kind of context, 4 stars is completely fine. So thank you very much. Also, just before we get on to the actual show, I wanted to let everyone know that the podcast is now also on YouTube. It's exactly the same content, but I do know that some people like to listen to things on YouTube rather than through podcast clients. If you want to go and find us, you can just put Hawk Binge into YouTube. We're pretty much the only thing that comes up, and then you can find us and follow us and subscribe to us that way. The only thing I am doing is that whenever we do talk about anything visual, like a page from the logbook or an album cover, I am just putting that up on the screen. So it can be a slight audiovisual experience. However, anything that we do talk about, we always link in the podcast description. So we can link everything that has just been shared and create a really big link-a-thon. But now we're pretty much listenable in every format that everyone likes.
Outstanding. So with all of the pleasantries out of the way, it's now time to strap ourselves in and head back to 1972. So a lot of albums released in 1972, but I have to say this is not quite the same year that we saw in 1971, although that was such a freak of a year for the colossal albums that were released then. This is a far more eclectic mix from a lot of different genres, still a lot of famous stuff here, but the net is slightly wider. So in 1972, we see Aretha Franklin, Young, Gifted and Black. Neil Young releases Harvest, which is obviously one of his bigger albums. Scorpions release Lonesome Crow. I had no idea that the Scorpions go all the way back to 1972. Jethro Tull released Thick as a Brick. Elvis Presley releases a couple of albums. That really does date the time for me, the fact that Elvis Presley is still releasing albums. And he sold out 4 nights at Madison Square Garden in one day. So that's a pretty big deal. Deep Purple released Machine Head and Made in Japan. So 2 massive albums from Deep Purple. Michael Jackson releases 2 albums, Got to Be There and Ben. And he's another one that I just struggled to think. You go right back to 1972. ZZ Top released Rio Grande Mud, which is a fantastic album. Wishbone Ash, Argus. Rolling Stones, Exile on Main Street, big one for them. A certain David Bowie releases The Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust, whatever happened to that. Alice Cooper, School's Out. Jefferson Airplane, Yes, released Close to the Edge. Black Sabbath, Volume 4, classic. Genesis, Foxtrot, with its 26-minute Supper's Ready, really the height of prog. Lou Reed releases a couple of albums, neither of which I like, but both of which were very famous. Gentle Giant, who I've heard much more of in the last few years than I ever did when I was younger, release Octopus. There is Status Quo, Pile Driver, Stevie Wonder, Talking Book, which is the one that has Superstition on it. And the Osmonds are all over this year, which is somewhat disappointing, apart from Crazy Horses, which I quite liked. So that is the year in album releases, 1972. You can see how different that is from the previous year, but it's really becoming somewhat more far-reaching in terms of the genres we're seeing and the kind of people we're seeing who keep going into the 1980s and beyond. So into the studio go Hawkwind to record Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La, Ti, Do. And the lineup for this album is Dave Brock and Nick Turner, as you'd expect, Del Detmar, Dick Mick, Lemmy on the bass, and Simon King on the drums. I'd always thought that this lineup came together to record this album, that this album is the beginning of this lineup. But actually, as we learned when we did the Silver Machine podcast, this is exactly the same lineup that recorded Silver Machine a few months previously. So actually, this is a band that have been together for a while, have recorded, have had a big hit, have some money coming in, have been touring. The concept of Space Ritual, which we will get to in a forthcoming podcast, is really coming together at this point. And Hawkwind are actually quite a big band. We've become so used to Hawkwind, at least I have, as a kind of a cult band, an underground band. It's a different thing to imagine them as a big name being written about constantly in the mainstream press, in Melody Maker and NME and the rest of them, getting really good reviews, causing a bit of a stir, and actually, you know, having that kind of audience. It reached number 14 on the UK album charts. In Search of Space was number 18, and as we heard, Silver Machine reached number 3. So again, a bit of a hit album, considering the kind of albums that we see coming out. They'd have to go some to be number 14. 80,000 sales in advance. So this is a band who are in demand and truly finding some form and finding some latitude to go in some new directions. So that is 1972. That is Hawkwind. That is Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La, Ti, Do. It's time to find out Matt's hot take. So is Matt going to be a Lord of Light, or is he going to turn android?
Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La, Ti, Do is an album that feels like it's having fun with the idea of what it means to produce conventional music. When I first read that title, the fact that they've taken the seven traditional noises that define musical notation and combined them into this strange Latin space phrase makes me feel like they're still behaving in a cheeky, playful way, like they're very comfortable messing around. The fact that they can take something as established as the musical spectrum and turn it into something which they then try and own makes me feel like they are embracing themselves as the musical misfits that they are trying to be. And again, having some fun with it. At least for me, I feel like they're not taking themselves too seriously. So I want them to be having some fun with their ideas without getting too intense about it, because then it's harder to just go along for the ride. I think that then the name of it, which feels more playful to me, is very at odds with the album design. I think the album design is great, but it looks authoritative. It's got a lot of edge to it. It's silver, it's glitzy. It seems to be in space, so there's that theme. But overall, it's a lot more moody than the previous cover, which was had a lot more colour. It had like hippie vibes. It had like Winged-Eared Lady and all that kind of stuff, even though it had the hidden Falcon or Hawk, probably, yeah, in there, that it reminded me actually more of like the Motorhead's debut album, you know, the large silver graphic out of a black background. Even the spiky logo is very familiar to me there. So it's interesting that they went in that direction. But I feel like that's a good hint at how the album's going to sound. I feel like the album feels a lot more aggressive and rugged overall. It feels pretty Hawkwindy. Again, the lyrics are reliably indecipherable when they're not completely incoherent. But there's a lot of energy there. There's an interesting mix, again, now of tracks which are quite heavy and riffy and more rocky and in your face. But it does pare back almost every track that happens in. There's one which is more subdued, more of the 12 string, more of the reverb, more of the FX. So this album kind of undulates. It's a bit of a tidal experience for me. The way it opens very brash and loud, but then moving straight into singing about space, going then back into like anti-authoritarian stuff, and then like just finishing with this almost apology letter from aliens telling humanity that they're not really welcome in space, which is kind of depressing. So yeah, it's an interesting album. Again, it feels more like an album. I'm not going to complain so much about tracks not finishing, which is great, because I'm sure that's as tiring for everyone listening as it is for my experience of the albums. The only thing that does weird me out again when you mention all those other albums that released this year is that I don't know why the recording still sounds so muddy. Albums that come out in the same year or even previous years sound so much better, and I don't feel like Hawkwind have an excuse, so I feel like they're doing it on purpose, and I don't really know why. The only thing I have found is that I've been able to dig my actual monitor speakers out of storage. I have a pair of Klipsch the Sixes, which are very nice for this kind of music, and when you turn the sound up, I feel like the clarity comes out, but at smaller volumes when you're listening to things in your headphones or you just want to be polite to your neighbours, I do find that a lot of the quality disappears, and I find that perplexing. But my general overview of the album is that it's actually a lot of fun. And I think probably, bar one vestigial track, which completely mystifies me why it's included, it's an album of very strong tracks.
Excellent. Sounds like we're getting a bit of a thumbs up on this one. So let's dive in track by track. And we start off with Brainstorm.
So the first thing I heard in Brainstorm is I got the reference that you put at the end of our very first episode when you said that we are on the runway ready for takeoff, because it is the first lyric of Brainstorm. So I just wanted you to know that I got that one. So thank you very much for that.
Yay!
I was surprised that there's no long intro. It's just, it's riff o'clock and right into the drums. You know, within the first 20 seconds, we're off to the races, which felt very different again. I felt like the spacey stuff normally involves a long intro. It just gives them a chance to warm up the audio generating machine before they get into it. But this time it's like, nope, we got something to say. Bang, here we go. That was already a, okay, cool. Hawkwind is serious about this. It's got a good riff. I can't tell you exactly what it reminds me of, but it's kind of familiar. Just the feeling, the distortion, the drive of the track. It sounds cool. I like it. There's a couple of interesting things at the beginning. Like after the first chorus, there's a bit where the singer goes that kind of ah, almost like they're trying to mimic or send up Led Zeppelin doing the whole like Whole Lot of Love thing. And I don't know if that's like a finger in the eye of Led Zeppelin or whether or not that's something that singers did in the 70s. I don't know if you know that.
No, I don't. I'd not really thought of it before, but there is a certain Plant-esque-ness to it. I suspect it's just Nick Turner going with the flow, but who knows?
Fair enough.
He's certainly all in on this track, Nick.
Yeah. And I think it's delivered with a very punk vibe, you know, like the chorus itself, when it has the brainstorm, it just has this brainstorm, here I go. It's got this real like twang to the vocal, like he just lets his accent fly.
Yeah, it's funny you should say that, because Brainstorm is a big track. It is a big statement of intent, but it is also one which is referred to by bands later in the 70s as an influence to them and on the genesis of punk. Really, it's so tempting to think of Hawkwind as this kind of spacey band, a heavy band, and a hippie band even, which I totally wouldn't, but it would be a common way to regard Hawkwind. And not to give them the credit, really, for being such an influence on punk. There's a really interesting piece of writing in Noisy, which is from Vice, and the article is called Punk Rock, Nudity and Lemmy and Other Reasons Why We Should All Love Hawkwind by a writer called Harry Sword. And there's a piece in this that says, quote, while a lot of people have the misconception that Hawkwind are some kind of prog rock band, they're nothing of the sort. Early records such as Do Re Mi Fa Sol La Ti Do included breakneck workouts such as Brainstorm that are the equal of the Stooges or Ramones in ferocity. John Lydon, aka Johnny Rotten, was a huge fan and used to attend early Hawkwind gigs regularly, stating in interviews that there would have been no Sex Pistols if it wasn't for Brainstorm. Which is quite a statement, I think.
Yes, we can call Hawkwind the progressive punk progenitors.
I think we can, which also would be a good band name.
Yeah, and I'll see how my spit guard like that on my microphone. A lot of P's right in a row there. I can completely believe all of that. The delivery is very rowdy. It feels very proto-punk, especially when they end up with the Kiss It at the end of that chorus, where they say, Kiss It. You know, it's the first time I've really heard them go into that aggressive-y delivery, which is just super fun and very of the punk era. It does go into a bit more what I would call quote-unquote classic Hawkwind around the kind of the 4 minute mark, when the, you know, the drawly vocals and repetition of This Is It comes in. It reminds me of Shouldn't Do That, you know, where they're going, this is it, this is it, this is it. Again, that just feels now very Hawkwind. I can feel it being that kind of like tribal, repetitive, spinning. There's even that kind of droney voice again, which before they were saying get nowhere on Shouldn't Do That. I can't even really hear what they're saying in this, but it's got that feeling of Hawkwind building on their already established foundation of the way that they use their vocals. So while keeping the Hawkwind tradition of having a very long opening track, this one I feel like it keeps its energy without wandering off sonically. And before I said the last album suffered a little bit from weird instrumentation babble, I feel like the rhythm section, which is new on this album, is really good at stopping Hawkwind from wandering off themselves. There's even a part of this where I felt like around 8 minutes, it feels like it's starting to get out of control. But then just when I'm starting to think, oh no, Hawkwind are falling back into bad habits, or at least habits that I don't like, there's a drum fill as if to say, oh no, you don't. And suddenly everything snaps back and we're back into it. It almost feels like the rhythm section is the sheepdog keeping all the wayward sheep instruments from just going all over the place. You know, it feels a lot more corralled. And I do feel like having this driving rhythm section just helps stop people from wandering off. So I think that's can only be an improvement of this, the way that the band is right now.
And it has quite the ending.
Yeah, the ending feels like how I thought the track was going to start. And it actually makes me feel like the ending is either the ending of this track or it's the start of the next track. But either way, when I first heard this ending, I was very happy. Because it's like, this is what I want Hawkwind to do. I want them to be able to have their track, but then keep that energy and get weird rather than do a fade or do some kind of cut that just ruins the vibe. So yeah, the way this ends is quite spectacular.
And then bleeds into Space is Deep,
which is a fantastic track. I'm a big fan of this one. This, for me, is the answer to the question that we posed last episode in how are they going to get the effects that they use into a track to feel ownable. And here, the mixing of the acoustic guitar with the FX is just perfect. I feel like harmonically they just work off each other. There's just so much going on. I get lost in the first couple of minutes of this track. I think it's the best Hawkwind singing I've heard yet. I obviously wasn't around when this first came out, but I listen to this and I feel like this is how my generation felt when Oasis came out. You know, there's that feeling of accessibility in the singing because it's not so well done, but it's done well enough that you enjoy it. But it feels like you want to join in. Like, I'm not a singer at all, but I've definitely kind of mouthed this while I've walked my dog around New York. And a couple of weeks ago when I was listening to this, there was still snow on the ground and it was like really dark, probably like 11 p.m., not a soul in sight, just me and my dog just listening to this track, and it just felt so atmospheric. It was really nice. There's some real, like, just wave your fist around, especially again when they keep a note, but then they go up. And that just makes you want to join in. You know, that's the inclusive bit, which, again, I think they did really well with Silver Machine. But this just feels a little bit more like they brought it closer. You feel like you could be sat down in front of whoever's singing it. It's just, it's very, very inclusive, even if it's also the lyrical content is quite critical of the human condition in a fun way.
Which they tend to be. I've got to say, it makes me very happy that you're into this track so much, because this is one of my all-time favourite Hawkwind tracks, and was from one of the first couple of times I would have heard it, it really sank in. I had a CD called Stasis, which was a compilation of all their music on the United Artists label. It's about the first five albums or so, I think. And I used to play this over and over and over, and I still love Space is Deep. As you say, it is one of those that you walk along kind of singing to. And Dave's voice is just brilliant on this track. And it's funny listening to the albums in order, actually hearing how Dave's voice is becoming like more assured and more confident. As you say, not technically like a singer, but as a vocalist, having some real character in his voice singing this kind of thing. It is beautiful.
And then it drops into a little jam at the end, which is really nice as well. So I feel like if it just stopped there, it may have been fine, but I wanted to know where it could go. And it does drop into a little Hawkwind jam, which is really nice. I don't know how to describe the bass tone. I will talk about it in another track where I feel like it's a bit misplaced, but in this one, it sounds almost like a bit funk based, just because it's not a deep note. It's actually, I want to call it like a rounded note. It kind of has a boink to it. It's got this feeling of a very obvious note, where bass can obviously be a lot more subdued and drony. You feel like you're hearing the notes very obviously. But I like that because it means that Lemmy has a chance to get involved, and we have this nice breakdown before we have a track that we can actually enjoy the full band getting in on.
Yeah, absolutely. It goes without saying, everybody loves Lemmy's bass playing, but it really does come through that Lemmy isn't just laying down the bottom end. He's playing all around the melody, basically, that the rest of the band are laying down. And, you know, as he says himself, he came on board thinking he was going to be playing rhythm guitar. He was a rhythm guitarist. And that totally does have a massive influence on how he then plays the bass from then on. He describes himself as playing more like low-end guitar than playing bass. But it really brings character to the tunes. And we end side one with a very, very brief keyboard interlude from Del Detmar called One Change.
Yeah, one change, the audio equivalent of one of those small inflatable bits of plastic packaging that you get in your Amazon box so your thing doesn't break.
You're not a fan.
I just, again, it's a bit like Paranoia Part 1 or something. I don't really know why they included it, besides the fact that they had a little bit more wax that they could carve into.
Quite a lot of bands put these little interludes into their albums. Like Sabbath would do it. Tone Iommi would play a little bit of classical guitar in between tracks or whatever. And I quite like them because they feel to me like an epilogue. And Hawkwind have tended to end things in this way. Not things that you've been massively keen on, but the end of, say, In Search of Space, Children of the Sun, kind of feels to me that the main album has ended, and then Children of the Sun is like a little encore, like an epilogue, a coda to the whole thing. And One Change feels like that. I get the impression that I can imagine Del Detmar just noodling in the studio and people just going, oh, that's quite nice. Stick that on. Just as a gentle finish to the record. As you say, probably great for Del, because you get royalties out of that.
I actually wrote that down because I was going to go in hard on this track. Considering it's less than a minute, I was like, how much content can I mine from less than a minute? So
I like it enough. I wish they'd done more with it. That was my thing. It's a lovely little piece.
I completely agree. I really like where it was going. There's a really nice dithering, like LFO modulation on the actual keys themselves. There's a lot of animation in there. So it's not boring. It doesn't feel vestigial. It just feels like a blip, which is strange. It feels more like a piano sound than we've heard from Hawkwind. It's not synthy as such. It does feel like it could be an electric piano. It does feel like it's got some modulation to it, but it's more of a traditional sounding piece of equipment. The fact that the intro to the next track is longer than this whole track is frustrating. I don't know whether or not it's just a noodle or they ran out of time or space on this or whatever, but like you said, it is the only track which Del Detmar's credited with writing, and I was wondering whether or not this was an attempt to see if Hawkwind was going to become more synth-led at some point, almost like this was like a water testing little noodle or something to see if people were like, oh, I don't mind it without the guitar. So maybe they'll do some of that in future. That was my only pontification about the track, was that maybe this was a little teaser to see what people would say about it. I don't know about that.
But you will find out. So we end side one and we flip the record over and we begin side two with Lord of Light, which takes his title from a science fiction novel by Roger Zelazny, if you didn't know, which you didn't know.
I did not know. So this track might be one of the most intense tracks I've heard Hawkwind produce. The intro is really cool. I feel like they've got these down pat, and then we just get into this really strummy, aggressive sound. It's got that guitar that we've heard from Spaces Deep, but it's just played much more frantically, which I really like, actually, because it takes what I've heard them do before. You can just hear the strings being scraped down to try and keep up with what will eventually be the pace of the record, which is pretty intense. The amount of lyrics at the beginning, when the lyrics come through, again, feel very intense. I think it's probably the most amount of lyrics and in a space of time that we've heard Hawkwind produce. So everything's turned up to 11 on this. The guitar, the speed, the vocals, everything. For the first 2 minutes, it's just an absolute driving piece, which is super intense. And again, coming off the back of like One Change and Spaces Deep, this feels like, again, when I was talking about the tidalness of the album, I really feel like this is the tide rushing forwards again after it's been kind of like clawed back from the last couple of tracks. So I really enjoy the intense opening of this. I really like around the 2 minute mark, there's a really long word of like begun, which they just hold, but then halfway through that lyric, they change the tone down, and that completely then changes the track, because it almost goes into what I have called like energetically wistful, where the track seems to halve in tempo but keeps the intensity, and then it doesn't let you go, but it just softens a little bit, and then they build it all up again with the whole like dying leads to trying. There's the big list of all these things happening, and again they rebuild up and up and up and up and up until it like crashes up again. There's lots of mystic language in here. It reminds me of the B-side of Silver Machine when they talk about 7x7, they talk about the seventh year, they talk about all this like mystical stuff going on. So yeah, there's a lot to like in this track. I feel like it's very different. And again, like Brainstorm, it feels like Hawkwind experimenting with some different, more hardcore deliveries. The only thing I do ding this track for personally is the low-end guitar, which is a little bit too high in the mix for me. And again, just the way that they've toned it to make the notes very obvious. I feel like the bass, such as it is fighting with the rest of it, and I find myself pulled towards it, which is not what I want, because I want to hear the lyrics and the swirling effects and the frantic guitar. So if I was to fix this track using my quote-unquote ability to go back in time and fix things, I would have just turned the bass down in the mix a little bit so it wasn't quite as invasive. But generally, this track is super intense and a lot of fun.
I would definitely wait till Lemmy is out of the room before I did that. Yes. This track kind of reminded me of what a kind of a black heavy album this is. I was listening to it on the headphones, just walking outside, and noted how pleasurable it is to really turn the volume up on this and a lot of the other tracks on the album as well, where I've never really thought that previous album of In Search of Space is slightly more airy and contemplative, basically. And it wasn't one where I always thought I have to max the volume on this. You get a lot out of it when you do that with Do Re Mi. And on this track, a lot of that probably comes down to that rhythm section, just making it such an aggressive sound quite a lot of the time. And yeah, I very much got into this and love listening to it and deafening myself with it. And we then come to Down Through the Night,
which feels a bit like Space is Deep, but without the jam at the end, because this one's quite short. It's only about 3 minutes. But again, it's got everything I like about Space is Deep, just in a different package. I like the strumminess. It feels like it's got a higher pace. When I first listened to this, I thought this was actually the B section of the previous track. I didn't realize it was a new track, because again, the blend of the songs works really nicely, which creates this interesting vibe of lower intensity but still carries the energy. So it's been nicely arranged. I feel like those two songs go really nicely together. Again, the vocals are really nice. It helps to cement the idea that Hawkwind can be a vocal-led band at some point. It's, again, strange that in things like the previous album, the incomprehensible mumbles have been replaced by someone who can actually throw down a lyric in a way which sounds beautiful and accessible. Yeah, the singing's impassioned, energetic, detailed, and in tune, which is everything I look for in a lyric.
That's pretty fair.
Yeah, I think the track could have been twice as long and I would have enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's quite concise, which is not something you would usually accuse Hawkwind of. This one definitely is. It does feel like quite a tight little track. It leads on to something which is not a tight little track, which is something of a dystopian nightmare of time we left this world today.
Yeah, this track is an event. Like, it's a whole thing. Like, you know, you said that we didn't know what they would release as a single after Silver Machine. I would have released this and just seen what the world would do with it. It's so weird. It's got a groove to it though. Like when it first starts, it's just a head nod. It's solid bass-led groove. This is the thing that I wanted Lemmy to be able to do. This is where the low-end guitar really comes into its own. The call and response of the lyrics is really fun. It just adds to the plodding groove of it. It sounds weirdly like it's in a house or a shed or something, the way it's recorded. Like the vocals, the response sounds like it's further away, which is kind of interesting. So you're left with a sense of space in the track. It feels like a song in several parts. Like the first 2 minutes has this nice groove to it. And then for me, it makes this weird transition, which I just called the clown car transformation, where suddenly it just goes completely bonkers and just goes all over the place. And I really don't know why it does that, but I suppose the track is so weird at the beginning, I shouldn't have expected anything else. The riff comes back in at the 4 minute mark again, and I'm pleased to hear that. So I feel like if I could just nix the 2 to 4 minutes out of this track, it would be a perfect 6 minute track.
Yeah, there's, as you say, there's so much to say about this track. It is a big, big track. I love the riff, and in particular, when they move away from the riff into the kind of big jam in the center, when the riff comes back, it comes back with such power. It's a real adrenaline moment. And I wanted to address that bit in the middle because it's really interesting. We've had discussions before about what Hawkwind do in the middle of tracks and where they go before it kind of pulls back. And as usual, there I was reading Hawkwind Days of the Underground, Radical Escapism and the Age of Paranoia by a friend of the pod, Joe Banks. And he actually addresses it, basically, which is why I thought that would be a nice little snippet.
I'm worried now. This is the time when I complain about something as being dumb, and then you bring literature and research that makes me sound like an idiot.
I bring one man's book that I'm quite enjoying reading. That's the limit of my research. What he says, which I think makes a lot of sense here, and I quote, "Hawkwind's willingness to let the music splurge messily outside the lines, to overwhelm the song's structure without destroying it, is what sets them apart from the rest of the British rock scene. And this is a prime example. It's not just psychedelic excess. Instead, they seem to be accessing some seam of transcendent primitivism, performing spontaneous alchemy rather than the same old tricks in a scene dominated by music that values technical flash over visceral noise. Hawkwind are travelling the opposite direction by unlearning the rules of traditional blues-based rock," which is beautifully put and includes the phrase transcendent primitivism. If I can ever find a sentence where I can make that work, I will be a happy man.
I think that's a way of looking at it, for sure. And I don't not agree. I wonder whether or not it's fully needed, because I feel like there's enough of what Hawkwind's doing in there for it to be entertaining without it. Or I might have hoped that maybe it was a little bit further into the track after it set itself up to be this quite nice, jangy, ad hoc track. Because there's bits later on when it just goes into the craziness still, and you know, like when this is happening, the second solo and jam is just so much more interesting to me. I don't feel like it's sonically cohesive in the same way that I don't feel like Yes could have wrote it. I still feel like it's very of them.
Mm-hmm. It would be interesting trying to hear a band of virtuoso musicians like Yes try to play "Time We Left This World Today." That actually would be hysterically funny. I love the lyrics in this. They are the lyrics of a dystopian present. Brain police are not far behind. They watch you as you walk the streets. This is not the summer of love, flowers in your hair, 1967. This is a kind of bleak social commentary. And I do love that's a place that Hawkwind go. You will love, by the way, as a spoiler alert, the live version of this on Space Ritual is absolutely killer. And we round out with The Watcher at a complete change in mood and tempo.
So finishing the thought of the tidal-based album, this is the last time that the seas recede in terms of energy. But I feel this time that when it recedes, it's waving goodbye. It's not showing any hint of coming back again. And this is a song to humanity about an alien force or some people who have escaped or some kind of entity that is leaving the world, insofar as we heard from the previous track that maybe it's time to leave. They've now left, and it's this very bluesy, bleak farewell letter. The lyrics have delivered in a very bluesy way. It feels very different the way that it's sung and the way that it's delivered. I feel like the lyrics are very articulate. They're not sung in the same way. It feels, again, a bit more impassioned, like you're getting choked up delivering it, like, I'm leaving, I'm not coming back. So there's a lot of emotion in this that is very evocative. It almost sounds like I'm being told off when I listen to it. You know, the first time after the adrenaline rush of the whole album, it does leave you feeling a little bit like, reminded me of Solaris, the very last scene of that film when they just pull back and you realise that the guy's just on the island surrounded by sea and just you're leaving them in the situation that they've created for themselves. It really reminded me of that. The avarice has destroyed your sphere and there's no room for you out here is just a very poignant way of summing up a lot of human activity, which I think a lot of bands talk about. But I just think that because this is delivered without the heaviness, it feels more real. You know, I think that the bass in this really sings. It's just the transition from note to note is glorious. It really fills in the space between the little finger plucks of the guitar. And I like just how it ends. You know, normally unlike most Hawkwind albums don't end for me. This one ends, and the first time it finished, I had to put on something else immediately, because being faced then with the silence after the track ended. It actually feels quite hollow and quite crazy. So yeah, it's really nicely done.
No, totally. It's another reason actually why we always make sure that you end your listening on the stream at the point where the original album ended. Because when you stream and you get like 3 or 4 bonus tracks, for me, they're good songs, they're Hawkwind songs, but they completely kill the mood of the beautiful end of this album on The Watcher. So I love that. Like, it's interesting what you were talking about, the lyrics and the articulation and everything. I find that Lemmy rarely gets credit as a lyricist because he's, you know, the rocker, Motorhead, you know, this huge kind of character and the huge presence he has. But he's a brilliant lyricist, amazing language. Even in, you know, you can listen to quite a lot of Motorhead songs, Orgasmatron, Brotherhood of Man. His use of words and mood is astounding. And I think on this, he really does create a fantastic mood. And he's got a great voice, a killer voice for this kind of mood.
Yeah, I think it's after the previous track, which goes into this Dadaistic exploration of what music can be, to end on this track is a fiercely intelligent move and really shows that Hawkwind has such a range of being able to go into complete sonic chaos, but also then pull themselves back and do something that has a beauty and restraint and delivery to it, which I feel, again, previous albums don't have. So I feel like this is another massive step. I guess sometimes, just for me as a listener, sometimes I feel like they go crazy when I want them to be restrained and they go restrained when I want them to be crazy. But that's just personal preference, and their abilities to craft the songs that they have makes this a really nice album. Again, for me, like, full of tracks which are worth listening to. You know, it feels like an album.
So that is the music, which is obviously getting a bit of a big thumbs up from both of us. But this was also something of a package, not quite to the extent of In Search of Space with that intricate sleeve design and the logbook. But there is clearly a lot of thought that's gone into the cover art and the package as a whole, the inner sleeve, the little message, and the text on the back cover. What did you make of all that?
I think, like we said at the beginning of the podcast, the switch from the design, which is more colourful, a bit more soft around the edges, still has a sense of design to it. And again, feeling like it could represent a force or an entity or something like that. But there were layers to it, and it felt maybe a little bit more playful and imaginative. This is very different. It feels colder. It feels like more two-dimensional, not in a bad way, but just in terms of the layering isn't there so much. It feels like we're on one plane. It looks like it's hewn out of metal, so it looks like the badge that like a space commander might wear in a kind of more militaristic way rather than like an explorer would. I feel like the other stuff, even with the logbook, feels like we're exploring. This almost feels like we're conquering, or we have been conquered. It looks like the emblem of the authority rather than before we had the flag of the explorer.
And that does fit quite well with the music. I would definitely say that the cover design and the music just go beautifully together. But you're right, it does feel like a departure, but actually it's still designed by Barney Bubbles and it's still writing by Robert Calvert. And it's described actually as a continuation of the themes, which didn't really come across to me until I was kind of looking into it to find out about the cover art. It is very much based around, you mentioned the seven notes, the do, re, mi, etc., etc., which alludes to the music of the spheres, apparently. There is some writing around this. It's not the easiest thing to kind of get straight in your head, but we're talking about concepts about the universe being an immense monochord with single strings stretched between absolute spirit at its low end and absolute matter. And concepts like this, where you can kind of read them and nod as you read them, but they're gone as soon as you stop reading them. I'm going to describe it to me as being brilliantly evocative, but less coherent than the logbook. And I know the logbook was this massive melting pot of so many ideas, but it felt coherent in terms of the journey that you were on and how that was connected to the music, not through the lyrics, but just in the zone that you were in. This to me is, there's still a lot of mystical and cosmic ideas going on here, but it's less easy, I find, to really fix that and the music together. The graphics of the cover totally fit, but there is some stuff on the back cover talking about the saga of Do Re Mi Fa Sol La Ti Do is a collection of ritualistic space chants, battle hymns, and stellar songs of praise as used by the family clan of Hawkwind on their epic journey to the fabled land of Thorosin, which is all very cool, as I say, very evocative. But I found it harder to read that and have that put me in a place to appreciate the music, mainly because the music is just so strong on its own merits. But it is great artwork. You'll see with Space Ritual, which will be a bonus podcast, because we're not really doing the live albums, but you can't not do Space Ritual, that the cover art for that is far more reminiscent of the mood of In Search of Space. So this one does stand out for me in that way. But just in terms of the aesthetics of it, just matches the quite brutal bleakness of some of the music and the themes in the record. So that is Do Re Mi Fa Sol La Ti Do, clearly an album that we both really love. I think I can speak for Matt on that one. We will come to the tracks that Matt is selecting for the playlist as we get to the playlist. But first, we're always interested to see what everybody else thinks of these albums and give ourselves something of a benchmark to see where we stand. So referring once again to our gospel for this kind of thing, Elric Newby's book, Hawkwind Fans Worldwide Facebook Top 40 Albums, to find out where Do Re Mi places. And it comes in at number 7, which is net 6 if you take out Space Ritual, one place above In Search of Space. Now, given how colossal this album is and how much we both love it and the love that's out there for it, the fact that there's actually 5 studio albums ahead of this is actually saying something, I think. And I looked at those 5 albums just to remind myself what they were. And the really interesting thing with those 5 albums is that they are spread across 3 different decades. And I thought that was remarkable. Most bands don't have that kind of longevity at all. And I tried to come up with another band who would have albums at the top of their list be spread across that kind of time. I could only come up with one, which would be King Crimson, if you were to assume that In the Court of the Crimson King, Red and Discipline would be solidly in the top 5. But other than that, I thought it was pretty unique. So Do Re Mi is just outside that top 5, being in net 6, but some extraordinary comments about it. It's clearly a huge album. A comment from a certain Sam Kerwin. There's all this other music, then there's Hawkwind, then way out there, light years into deep space, there is Do Re Mi, pure, distilled, inherent, total Hawkwind. Which sums it all up rather nicely and brings us to the question of the tracks from Do Re Mi that would be on the master playlist, just the one, and then what we would select for the Hawk Binge Sessions playlist and the actual release of the first Hawkwind Sessions playlist made up of the selections that Matt has made over the past 3 albums and those tracks from albums we've been listening to along the way. So what's your thinking, Matt?
So Andy, this is the first time where I don't have an absolute firm favorite. I feel like the other albums, there's been one track which I've grabbed and thought, yeah, that's the one which I really like. And there's probably 4 in this which I really like. So I want you to help me, or maybe I can just talk this through with you and we'll see which one we get to as a way of mixing this up. So I do like Brainstorm, because of just the raucous energy, how different it feels, and the fact that it could be a track which enables a entire genre of music further down the line, inspires another generation of artists. So you can't ignore that as an important track. The next one, Space is Deep, I really enjoy. The only thing that I worry about that slightly is that, is it too close to You Know You're Only Dreaming? And am I going to create a playlist of just all the soft things that Hawkwind do? And that's the only reason why I don't immediately go for that track. Down Through the Night feels different somehow, just because of its speed and its intensity. And the fact it's just the guitar, bass and singer makes me feel like that track is different enough to You Know You're Only Dreaming for it to be interesting. And The Watcher, again, is just such a soulful, competitive track. It's one that I still think about long after the album is done. So it's a real tricky one for me in this one. I think a lot of it is just kind of mood-based. Saying it again, probably, if I just did a quick cull now, I think Space is Deep and The Watcher are the two which I would elevate. There's probably more Brainstorms on the way, and Down Through the Night is really nice, but Space is Deep does have the breakdown into the full track, which I also really like as a way of encompassing all the Hawkwind things. So I guess both of those will go into the sessions, because I really like those too. So out of Space is Deep and The Watcher, which one really calls to you, just out of interest?
To be honest, I would always find it very hard to see beyond Space is Deep. It wouldn't just be on a master playlist for Hawkwind for me. It would probably be, you know, if you said, okay, well, you've got five tracks, Space is Deep would be one of them.
Then I feel convinced. I think The Watcher's fantastic, and shouts out to the band for making a track which feels such a modern kind of protest piece in a really well-delivered way. Not to draw any kind of parallel, very weird parallel, but it reminds me of when Perfect Circle recovered a whole bunch of old protest songs, like back in 2000 and something, the early 2000s, and they did The Fiddle and the Drum, and it was just them singing in harmony. Again, no guitars, no anything. And I really feel like if you put The Fiddle and the Drum and The Watcher next to each other, they would make like a killer little EP of just really making you feel like you should take a long look in the mirror. So like, with that being said, let's put Space is Deep on there, because I really like that one as well. And I hope to pick something that honours Hawkwind's more raucous energy in the future, just to balance the playlist. Let's go with that.
So we have Space is Deep and The Watcher are the final picks for the Hawk Binge Sessions playlist, which is about to be put live on Spotify. Matt, what's on it?
So I'm going to press publish on the playlist as soon as we're done recording this. You can find all playlists again by searching Hawk Binge on Spotify. We're the first thing that pops up. We will also be linking to it in the description notes of the podcast. But very quickly going through the tracks right now, we have Sing It As You Really Are by Hawkwind, Howl by Hong Kong Express, How the West Was Really Won by Trent Reznor, Mirror of Illusion by Hawkwind, Apocalypse Hymn by High Reaper, Three Gates by Insect Arc, You Know You're Only Dreaming by Hawkwind, Greetings from a Distant Friend by the North Americans, Kick in the Eye by Bauerhaus, Children of the Sun by Hawkwind, Kerosene by Eve Tumor, Peaches and Regalia by Frank Zappa, Silver Machine by Hawkwind, Death Realms by Blackwater Holy Light, The Mirror's House by Geobia, Only a Northern Song by The Beatles, and Forgotten Days by Paul Bearer.
That's a pretty eclectic and interesting mix. Hopefully there is something in there for any lover of Hawkwind to grab onto. And we'd love to hear from you if you do, and we'd love to hear from you if you don't. We had some good correspondence earlier. Where can people get in touch with us, Matt?
We are at Hawk Binge on Twitter and Instagram, and we take long form communications at our email address, which is podcast@hawkbinge.space.
And as usual at this point, I plead for ratings and reviews with as many stars as you can spare. We appreciate all that. It makes us easier for other people to find. So please do that. The next Hawk Binge podcast is a bonus as we take a look at Space Ritual. It's a bit of a spoiler alert, because the fact that we're doing a bonus podcast for Space Ritual means that Matt already knows that this is a big album and one that's very, very popular and historic for the band. After that, we will be back on the bandwagon of the studio albums. It'll be studio albums right on through to the bitter end. But for now, it is time we left this pod today. Catch you later. So, that is In Search of Space.
No, it's not.
No, it's not, is it? So, that is not In Search... No. So that is Do Re Mi. Thank God you pointed that out. That would have been embarrassing.
You get your own little bonus bit after I messed up.